why don't we go ahead and get started? I see we have the IFRS 9 Marching and Chowder Society here. And Bernadette, I think you're taking the first paper. This is Bernadette's first meeting with us. So house rules are that you have to be nice to her for the duration of this meeting. Which is okay, I wasn't nice to her the other day when we talked about the paper, so you can make up for my bad behavior. Bernadette,
yeah.
Take it away.
Sure. Okay, so we're discussing Agenda Paper 9. And Agenda Paper 9 addresses an issue relating to embedded derivatives and IAS 39, and specifically whether an interest rate floor at 0% should be separated from a floating rate post-contract and accounted for as a derivative in a negative interest rate environment. And so the original submission is reproduced in Appendix B of the staff paper. And the issue is that under IAS 39, an embedded derivative is required to be separated from a host contract and accounted for as a derivative if the economic characteristics and risks of that embedded derivative are not closely related to the host contract. And more specifically, paragraph AD 33B of IAS 39 states that an embedded floor on an interest rate on a debt contract is closely related to the economic characteristics and risks of the host contract as long as that floor is at or below the market rate of interest when the contract is issued and the floor is not leveraged in relation to the host contract. And so this means that an embedded interest rate floor is required to be separated from the host contract if the floor is in the money when the contract is issued, and that's irrespective of whether the floor is leveraged or not. So we need to determine whether the intrinsic value of that floor is positive. And so the question raised by the submitter relates to how these requirements should be applied in a negative interest rate environment. They provide an example of a five-year loan with the rate of interest of LIBOR plus a specific margin with the LIBOR component floored. And the submitter notes that in the recent negative interest rate environment, that LIBOR floor is actually below the is above the market rate of the benchmark rate of interest being LIBOR. And so the submitter has two alternative ways of accounting for this. The first one is that the embedded floor should be separated and accounted for as a derivative, and that would be following the requirements of AG 33B as you would in a positive interest rate environment. And furthermore, proponents of that view consider that the market rate of interest is actually the benchmark rate of interest. And the second view is that the embedded floor should not be separated. And supporters of that view are of the opinion that the 0% floor is a more of a special case. And they would argue that negative interest is not interest more, but it's more so a fee or a penalty. And so therefore they think it's more of a commercial pricing mechanism to prevent lenders having to pay borrowers. And so the requirements of AG 33B would not apply. So in terms of outreach, we asked securities regulators, accounting standard setters and large firms for their views on this issue. The feedback received is summarised in paragraphs 16 to 24 of our staff paper. Overall, many respondents noted that they hadn't yet observed the issue in practice. But some others did say that they had already observed this in certain European jurisdictions. But they did note that it was a relatively recent phenomenon and therefore not quite yet widespread. In terms of the predominant accounting treatment, it was not to separate the 0% floor from the host contract in a negative interest rate environment. And there were two main arguments that we found that were put forward in support of this. The first one was similar to view two of the submitter, which was the 0% floor being a special case and arguing that negative interest does not actually represent interest. And the second view was that the market rate of interest referred to in paragraph AG 33B should be considered to mean the overall rate of interest, which is a benchmark rate plus any appropriate spreads. So some other respondents noted that the embedded floor did need to be separated, so there was some evidence of diversity in practice. And this is similar to view one of the submitter, and those respondents would apply AG 33B and also consider the market rate of interest to be the benchmark rate of interest. So in terms of our staff analysis, we approached it by first of all considering whether the requirements of AG 33B should apply in the first instance to a floor in a negative interest rate environment, and then went on to consider how those requirements should be applied. So first of all then, in considering whether the requirements of AG 33B were appropriate in a negative interest rate environment, we noted that that paragraph just refers to the interest rate on a debt contract and doesn't really distinguish in any way between a positive and negative interest rate. And also we noted that in IFRS 9 it is already contemplated that interest can be negative. While it's made up of a number of component parts, it can overall be negative. And so we couldn't really see any justification not to apply the requirements of AG 33B as you would in a positive interest rate environment. And then going on to look into the application of AG 33B, and specifically the requirement to consider the interest rate floor to the market rate of interest. So we noted from the results of the outreach that there were some diverging views as to how the market rate of interest should be determined, whether it was always equal to the benchmark rate or it should be taken to mean an overall coupon. I guess our first observation is that requirement to compare the interest rate floor with the market rate of interest arises regardless of whether you have a positive or negative interest rate environment, and we wouldn't really see any reason why that determination should be different in a negative interest rate environment. And secondly, we noted that the term market rate of interest is used in a number of other areas in IAS 39, and having looked at some of those examples, we observed that a lot of the references were quite closely linked to the concept of fair value in IFRS 13. And specifically, we found that paragraph AG 64 of IAS 39 describes the prevailing market rate of interest as being a rate for a similar instrument, similar as to currency, term, type, and interest rate, and with a similar credit rating. And so on that basis, we thought that in order to determine the appropriate market rate of interest, it would, when the contract was issued, it would be appropriate to consider the specific terms of that contract, including any relevant credit or other spreads that are appropriate for the counterparty and the market in which it's operating. And so based on that analysis, we thought that there was sufficient guidance within IFRS considering how you would treat a floor in a negative interest rate environment, and also how you would determine the market rate of interest. And considering also the outreach results, we recommended that the committee should not take this onto its agenda. And so I guess the first question for the committee is whether or not you agree with our staff recommendation, and if you have any other questions that you'd like to pose to us.
Comments? Reinhardt?
I agree with the second analysis in terms of how to interpret AG 33B, that is an arm's length rate of interest as opposed to a benchmark rate.
Yeah.
But I'm not convinced that AG 33B was written in the context of both positive and negative interest rates. And though I understand the staff's analysis, I do think there is some merit to the submitters or some of the arguments that were put forward that the negative interest rate is a special case. When we as a committee talked about the presentation of negative interest in the statement of income, we didn't say negative interest is interest expense. We said it should be some appropriate expense category. And so I think there's some merit to that argument. And I think as well, when I looked at some of the guidance that the staff referred to in IFRS 9, paragraph B4.1.7a, it talks about negative interest being effectively a fee that exceeds the consideration that the holder gets for the time value of money, credit risk, et cetera. So, as I say, I understand the staff's analysis, but I do think there's merit to the other argument that it's a special case.
Okay, let's start with Bob and then work around the table this direction. Bob?
Okay. The first point I wanted to clarify was on the example, because I think in the example, the floor is effectively not zero, but the floor is effectively 3%, because once you look at this spread you put on the other side, and effectively that loan would never pay less than 3%. So that helps me in analyzing and agreeing with the staff that the floor should be based on the market rate, not just the benchmark. And I think the wording in the guidance is pretty clear. I think it does apply to the market rate. So in those, when you look at it that way, I think it'll be pretty rare that you'll have a situation where you'll actually have negative interest. But it is possible, and I have seen a case. I do agree with the staff's analysis. The way I kind of looked at it, negative interest is interesting. In the previous IFRIC conclusion we had earlier this year around interest, negative interest, can you classify that as interest revenue? We said no, because it's not a cash inflow. But we never reached the conclusion that that couldn't be called interest. Right, we never precluded that from being an interest expense.
Agreed.
So that helped me think about, well, okay, yeah, maybe this is interest, and therefore I agreed with the staff's analysis.
Yeah, and I think from our perspective as well, looking at the IFRS 9 guidance and picking up on your point about the fee, while it does say, for example, it could be considered as a fee, it is still part of the overall makeup of interest, which is made up of a number of components.
Regarding, I agree with Bob. Exactly. Last time also, we did not go and say whether this was interest or not, and because I think that's a very big debate about what happens. If we go on the route right now, and I also agree that's a possibility, my worry is that if we say this is not interest or there's a special case, what happens to the other issues about classification and other things where these are treated as normal interest bearing instruments?
Let me ask you this, Kumar. If we said that no, this isn't interest, that so you didn't have to bifurcate this, could the issuer or the borrower then subsequently do an interest rate hedge on this?
That's one. You're putting it out of hedging. That's one thing. Secondly, the question comes up, then if I say this is not interest or other things, then the question arises, what do I do under the SPPI test in IFRS 9?
Right.
That's where the concern, I do not deny anything that you have said, Bob. That's where my concern comes in. Now, I've heard a lot about this, that what is this negative interest? We say, for example, it can be a fee. A lot of developments have happened recently in this thing, especially in Europe, if you look at central bankers. And what they're saying is that, yes, it is kind of a fee or a tax, but with a floor. And the floor comes in is the cost of carry of cash. So if you take something below that cost of carry, people will just pull it out and hoard cash in a warehouse. But if it is within that bounds, it exhibits all the properties through the transmission mechanism of like an interest rate. So it's a mixed bag. I'm not trying to say we can conclude, nor do I think we are qualified, because it's going so much into the economics. The reason why I'm just a bit cautious about going about and saying this is a special case, then we'll have to very tightly cut it out, because what are the other consequences that come out of it? That's the concern.
Understand.
Charlotte?
Yeah, I was generally supportive of the staff's analysis. We see this in practice. As I said, the floor, as you describe, is generally set at the coupon is floored at zero, and the benchmark isn't explicitly referenced. And so it can still go to zero, because there's a lot of LIBOR plus 300 bips could be less than zero.
Yeah.
And we see that. And I suppose you should maybe deal with that as well, to say just because it's a market interest, not benchmark, it's still an issue. I think the banks I know have generally carried on treating it as interest.
Yeah.
The IFRIC sort of previous update said that you basically didn't say what it was. It's a presentation issue. It's not part of the calculation. People continue to put it in net interest margin, and to be honest, that reflects how people view it. They view it as most people still view it as negative interest income, and that's how it's treated. So it would seem odd to go for a different answer here. I think there is a question if it's something else. Anyway, would it be bifurcatable as being referenced to something else? And how would you evaluate that? I do think the other case that is interesting is where you have jurisdictions that don't allow interest to go below zero, how you evaluate those sort of implicit flaws anyway, which aren't explicitly in the contract but part of statute. And I think that could do with being mentioned.
Bruce?
Thanks, Wayne. I mean, having been through the paper, I agree with the staff's analysis 100%. What I don't agree with is I'm in the Reinhardt camp. I'm not convinced that this is interest. You know, when I took a look at it, I mean, bear in mind, I come from a region of the world where negative interest rates will probably not exist in any of our lifetimes. So it's not something we see in practice at all. But just thinking through the economics of it, I mean, to me, this is a penalty for putting money in the bank. It's not an interest. It's not a return. It's very simply, to me, a penalty input of it. When we then start talking about would we prepare to do a special case, I think if we have to, we have to. This is a very unique economic case. It's very different to anything we've envisaged. And if we believe that this is something that does need special consideration, then we need to do it. But I guess I'm only concerned, and I accept that there are concerns, so you're right. What does it do to the hedging? What does this? And I'm not going to pretend that we can't, there aren't a myriad of problems with it, but this is a very unique economic circumstance where we're now talking about potentially being charged for putting money in.
I do not disagree, Bruce. This is something which is there. But the question is, my worry comes is how do I cut from the points Bob raised and what else do I get into to call this a special case? That's where the worry comes in.
Well, I guess the way I would look at it is, I mean, that when I started first chatting to people about this, and I mean, as I said, none of them experienced it, but when I spoke to them intuitively, most people turned around and said, this isn't interest, which means if we consider this isn't interest, we're now considering, well, where does it fall? Does IFRS 9 deal with it? But, you know, IAS 39, you know, do any of the standards deal with how to account for such a transaction? If it doesn't, then we need to give guidance on how you deal with this specific case. But to analogize it to interest because we're calling it interest. And I think the only reason we've called this negative interest is because we didn't really know what else to call it. You know, and I just get concerned that we're bucketing we're kind of shoehorning it into something because it's easier than actually having to address the issue.
Fair enough. I think there's also, I can turn around and give you a lot of literature coming out of the World Bank and other places where people will say that this is akin to an interest environment. So there are two debates to it.
I agree.
So it depends upon which side. Now the question is, how do we cut it?
You can spend a lot of time thinking about what is in fact the nature of interest.
Yes.
I spent several months on it once, and it comes out awfully metaphysical at the end. I think 9 says interest is a combination of a bunch of stuff. What we call interest is a composite. So, Sue?
I was going to say something along those lines because I get nervous when we start questioning whether this is interest overall, because we've tried to be very clear on IFRS 9, given that we were drafting it at the time that negative interest rates started to become apparent, that the overall interest rate, the overall rate could be classified as interest, and we were also tried to be careful in the previous IFRIC papers not to say it wasn't interest, but rather to talk about whether it was appropriate to book it as revenue when it was an outflow rather than an inflow, and then we sort of ducked the interest expense side of the discussion. But we didn't really question whether or not it was interest. But I think there is a subtlety, and I have a little bit of sympathy for the arguments that Bruce and Reinhardt have raised, because I think that we've said that, you know, as Wayne says, interest can be comprised of a number of different things going on at the same time. So we've got lots of different aspects of that makeup of the interest rate. Overall, we're happy to say it's interest as defined by IFRS 9 because it provides a return for credit and time value of money. But there could be circumstances where one piece dominates and it's tipping the rate. So that would make me think, overall, I've still got something which I would think of as overall being an interest rate. But I think what we've got here is a situation where a piece of it can dominate.
It is dominating.
And we could sort of try and dance on a pinhead and say, well, in that circumstance, because of the domination of that aspect, this AG 33 whatever wouldn't apply, and we could do that. We'd have to be incredibly subtle, though, to try not to blow up a whole load of other stuff, which is the concerns that Kumar's been raising. But I think, you know, technically, you could make that type of argument. Although, if we could be comfortable with the way that the staff have approached it, I think maybe it would be an easier approach.
The way I would say, and I'm being pragmatic here, Bruce, rather than, I think we get to the same place here with the way we are getting to. On the pinhead dance, the biggest thing that worries me is not hedging or anything, Bob. If some people start questioning, do you stop discounting? End up questioning a very fundamental aspect. And the pinhead dance that worries me in cash flow hedging, and okay, forgive me, I'll bring back things to hedging with that. Which component are you hedging then? Can you do the component bits? a lot of this thing, the pinhead dance, becomes a razor tooth dance very soon, and that's my worry. Now, we can try, but I'm not sure how far we can cut it that way.
Subtlety isn't one of our strong suits.
My thought is the same as the others. You know, I agree with this analysis and the conclusion, but you know, I'm worrying about whether this is really the negative interest is really an interest. You know, I'm just thinking of the case that, you know, we can avoid the negative interest very easily. What I meant is that you can just sit on the money and do not deposit in the bank. But by depositing the money into the bank, you have to pay negative interest, which seems to me very much like fees or the rate. Yeah, so I don't have any answers to your question, but what I'm trying to say is that we have to think about what is a negative interest before we complete this project, or, you know, do some other things. So we need a study of negative interest.
John?
I mean, I agree with the staff that I don't think it's a special case. I think there's probably lots of issues arising from negative interest rate environments that probably merit further study in a much broader array. Hopefully the phenomenon is not going to continue long enough for us to actually have to do that study. But if it does, I think we would have to consider lots of other issues. But I don't think this is a special case. I think this fault, clearly, I agree with the staff's analysis. The only thing is, the question asked here is about a LIBOR floor. It seems to me that what Bo's point is right. This is not a floor at zero with a positive interest rate with the spread. And then the conclusion seems to imply that I compared the market rate of interest with the zero floor, but actually this is a 3% floor if you've got a 3% spread. So there's actually an in-the-money derivative in this at inception, because LIBOR is negative and there's a LIBOR floor at zero. So I'm not sure that comes out. I mean, is the question, AG33B focuses on AG33B focuses on an interest rate floor and says you compare it to the market interest rate. The principle is it in the money? I mean, this is actually a component of the interest rate floor. So this is a LIBOR derivative which is in the money at inception. And I don't know if we should analyze that as separately as being a LIBOR floor, or whether you would just add on the spread and try and consider whether it's in the money compared to market. And that paper doesn't analyze that issue. I don't see it.
Didn't, because we were looking at the market. Absolutely fair, John. That's one way of looking at it. It's how you set up the host will determine what that is.
Yeah.
The question which we are asking is, from a perspective, does the standard force you to do that, to look at a LIBOR floor and data mark? Because then as soon as you get negative, you will be in the money. That's a question.
I mean, the question, I suppose the issue is, I mean, if you say, do you analyze it as really being a 3% floor, or do you analyze a 0% LIBOR floor against what the market is, including the spread? It seems to me you're comparing apples with oranges if you're doing that.
Okay, I don't know whether I've got Sandy, Andrew, or both down there. Andrew?
Me. They're very similar comments to John and some others. I don't think we should go down the this is a special case type argument, or use this as the occasion to revisit the analysis or the definition of interest or the analysis of negative interest rates in IFRS 9. I'm worried about the collateral damage from getting down that path. I think the example and the tentative decision as currently worded a bit confusing on what we're actually comparing, and need to make a like-for-like comparison. You know, noting that, well, I think we should probably compare is the total coupon, so the benchmark plus the spread, with the total coupon for an identical instrument with the same counterparty but unflawed. Mm-hmm. And economically, the equivalent unflawed instrument would have, I think, a slightly larger spread.
Should do.
So you might come out, do the analysis, and conclude actually that, bearing in mind materiality, there isn't an embedded derivative to be separated. The submission also got into some finer points on how to make the comparison. Do you need to look at the spot rate? Yeah. May you look at the forward rate? Can you look at some kind of average forward rate? I mean, that's perhaps going beyond.
That's going away
where we need to do this, and that would not be specific to this particular fact pattern. That would be a more general question on how to apply AG33Bs, and maybe we want to stay away from that. But I just know we don't currently seem to tackle that part of the question.
Andrew, exactly, because that's very specific. That will depend upon how your markets are pricing it, what's your host, how you've set it up. And that gets into the world of if you're doing intrinsic value hedging, how do you set up that intrinsic value? I would say you have to be consistent.
Mm.
The reason I agree with John's point, and also what Bob said, is that when you look at an intrinsic value of an option, you have two variables. You have got the strike price, and you have got what you compare it to, what you're calling the market rate of interest. The question you're asking is, how do you determine the strike? Is it like for like? Another question. Now, that also gets Andrew said, what is the host? How do you determine the host? What will be the market doing? And that becomes very specific. We can put some wording in the rejection for that, but I don't see how much more we can do on that one. Happy to give it an attempt, but my proposal would be to put it most details in the rejection if other things, because we are really getting into the specifics of how that instrument and what that market is doing, and that will move from market to market.
Tony,
probably not much to add. I think I probably share Reinhardt and Bruce's concerns that if somebody came along and said, I don't want to present negative interest as interest, I'd probably still find it quite hard to say that that was the wrong answer. But I understand all of the potential collateral damage that might arise from trying to argue that it's not interest. And I think given where we got to when we talked about the presentation of negative interest, we were quite careful not to specify where it had to be presented. So I think it would be difficult if somebody came along and said, I wanted to present that as a fee and an operating expense, to say that's the wrong answer. But I understand that it's probably too dangerous to try and define what's in interest and what isn't. So I'm not unhappy with where this goes. I think I have the same thoughts as the others around looking at a market interest rate and what the interest rate of this instrument is.
We can consider putting some more wording in the rejection on the other side, John, that how do you do that? Would that take care of the concern? Because going more detailed, then we'll have to go into a lot more detail into the specifics.
I think the question is, do I analyze this as a LIBOR derivative, in which case I think it's in the money and you fail 33B, or do I sort of try to convert it into an interest rate floor, and then I might reach the conclusion that there isn't an embedded derivative.
Because AG33B refers to it being an interest rate.
Yeah, it only envisages an interest rate floor. It doesn't envisage a component, a LIBOR floor. But so the question really to me, which I don't think is clear in the rejection, is should this be analyzed as an interest rate floor, including all components, or should it be analyzed as a LIBOR floor? Because I think if you analyze it as a LIBOR floor, you get an embedded derivative of these
immediately,
bifurcations.
That's what I'm immediately, because you're taking the spread out on both sides, it will cancel out.
Perhaps if the opening paragraph, which refers to it being a zero floor, is what's causing that confusion, if it referred more to it being an interest rate
floor, maybe that's something we could explore along those lines.
Because that's the only instance where.
Yeah,
because the analysis itself doesn't quite address that point. Just talk about the market rate of interest.
And also put some more things in the thing, what you're talking about, John, when we look at that. Will that work?
Yeah, I do. I think that works. One of the concerns I do have a little bit, we haven't really discussed, it was brought up or referred to here, is what is market and when is the floor embedded in the market and we consider it to be a market and not a separate floor? And let me give you an example. Deposits. Right, so we banks have lots of deposits, and I'm not aware of that. There are some cases, but I'm not aware of that many cases in this negative rate environment where they're actually taking money away from the depositor. They're just not paying. Well, there is implicitly then a floor in that, but I think that's part of the market.
Bob, you're getting into, agreed. You had these things in embedded square questions, and especially I've spent a lot of time on, let's say, more than the ubiquitous, is construction contracts and repricing contracts, and what is the market?
Yeah.
Now, my argument for that would be is that that's a general requirement for the embedded derivatives when you compare it, if the economic characteristics are the same. I think here we have specific requirements which override that, so I would try and focus on this one. I agree where you're coming from, but that's a much broader question, very broad question.
Martin?
It seems to me that we are in a kind of minefield, so I would support to have a non-interpretation. And I like also the outcome that either view one or view two could be applicable. It depends on facts and circumstances. So therefore, overall, I would support to go forward with that.
Okay, did we have one from the corner here?
Yeah, I guess my question as I read the paper was, so what? If it's an embedded or not? I mean, I get that the accounting changes, but economically, what am I portraying to someone who's a user of the financial statements, right? Is it being an embedded a bad thing or a good thing, right?
Yes.
To know that information, right? So I ask myself, okay, under IAS 39, if it's an asset, what happens to it? If IAS 39, it's a liability, what happens to it? What happens to it in IFRS 9 if it's a liability? What happens to it in IFRS 9 if it's an asset, right? And I sort of said, I don't know if it's embedded, it's a bad thing, right? Or does it make it more of a fair value, right? I mean, the central question for me isn't the interesting question about the theory of whether it's embedded or not, but in the end, what shows up in the financial statements and what do I see? Because there's an economic phenomenon going on, and I want to see that, right? And just for fair value, if it's an embedded, more accurately convey that to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, personally, I think maybe that it being an embedded in a fair value, it does reflect that to me. So I don't know. I felt like I can get lost in all of that debate and what interest rates represent, but the reality of it is that I may be paying you to take your money, right? Or vice versa, and isn't that what I really want to see? So I don't know, for me, it was less about the interesting accounting theory of it, but what happens in the actual financial statements and what do I see?
Okay. Let's start with a simple show of hands. Subject to some potential rewording, how many support the agenda decision? Okay. Kumar has offered a couple of times to add something.
Yes.
You know what you want to add?
Yes.
Okay, can you tell us what you want to add?
Effectively, it's the requirement, I think, pulling up from John and Bob's comment, is that the requirement in EG33B refers to market rate of interest, that refers to the overall interest rate in an instrument. And we are not diving into LIBOR components of that. The standard does not require you to do that. So when we do the opening set intro to this, that's the bit which we will clarify.
Okay, so you're going to clarify specifically.
Yeah.
Okay. And that ties in with the analysis actually better. So I think
that okay with everybody?
Yeah.
All right, that's what we'll do.
Is that
Thank you.
Okay.
One down.
Hey, hold on your paper.